And I think the culture becomes a subset of that. That's just going to breed a great environment. And winners want to work with winners.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Jeff LeBrecq, multi-brand franchise owner. Today, we're discussing his investments in Conserva Irrigation, Koala Insulation, and Bumble Roofing, how a medical sales rep leveraged his background to build 3 7-figure businesses, how each business led him to acquire the next one, and why he wouldn't be as successful as he is today if it wasn't for franchising. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
Jeff, we're excited to have you on and hear your story here. We want to hear all about the journey. You're now a multi-territory, multi-brand franchise owner within the home services space, all with the Empower brands. So for those at home who are not familiar with Empower brands, they now own, I believe, 10 franchises, for the most part operating in home services, Jampro probably being the largest and most recognizable, a janitorial company. Empower Brands also owns Architect, Bumble Roofing, Canopy Lawn Care, First Team, which I believe is a restoration brand?
That's correct.
Koala Insulation, Outdoor Lighting Perspectives, Superior Fence and Rail has been a big brand over the past couple of years, and also Wallaby Windows. So if you don't mind, before we get to what you've done, take us back. What were you doing before franchising? It's my understanding that you weren't a business owner. What were you doing prior to franchising? And bring us to the why. What brought you to exploring franchising?
Yeah, it's a great question. My background was always in sales. Went to college, majored in hotel restaurant management at Virginia Tech. And the big reason there is I really didn't know what I wanted to do. This was a long time ago, not to date myself, but originally I went in as communications, and a counselor was like, well, those are a dime a dozen, but the hospitality industry would be a good fit. And there's a 99% job placement. So got down the road on that path and realized during some internships that it wasn't what I wanted to do full time. After working front desk and housekeeping, I said, man, this isn't going to be for me. So got into sales when I got out of college. Started selling cell phones for a short while, and then we got into copier sales, the capital equipment to really cut my teeth. And then from there, got into medical devices and had a nice career for about 12 years in the operating room, selling various surgical devices for all sorts of specialties. And that really allowed me to hone the selling skills and providing a high level of service and really learn how to not just qualify prospects, but also to present and troubleshoot and time management and just a high level of service. I think a lot of salespeople have an entrepreneurial spirit, which is why they get into sales. It's a way to sort of be your own boss and dictate your own path. And I always love the fact that my base salary on January 1st, I wake up and know the least amount of money I'm going to make, and the rest is up to me. A lot of my buddies were like, why are you in sales? You don't know what you're going to make. And I'm like, why do you do what you do? You know exactly what you're going to make, you know? And I wanted a lot of it to be up to me, and knew I wanted to be a business owner at some point, and failed a few, you know, side hustles. And people will tell you it's really hard to make a side project work, or it's really hard to make a business successful when you have a backup plan. If you have a plan B, then your plan A is probably not going to work. So my wife and I just kind of got focused on getting ourselves in a position to be able to take the next step. Ironically, I stumbled across Empower Brands, which at the time was Outdoor Living Brands, because we were getting some exterior lighting on our house. Erin Zide was the local franchisee for Outdoor Lighting Perspectives. And while she was doing the estimate and walking us through that process, you know, she was asking, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I do sales, but I'm really at my wit's end and kind of sick of it and want to do my own thing. And she was like, well, I can help. And that was it. That was my introduction into Outdoor Living Brands. And it ultimately landed on Conserva Irrigation in 2019 as our first brand.
That's it. Erin Zide related to Scott Zide, the CEO of Empower Brands?
It is. So Scott and Erin happen to be neighbors that we knew a little bit, but not extraordinarily well. And obviously we're extremely close with them now, because they've certainly changed the trajectory of my life and really helped me along this journey. So, and not a bad resource to have in your backyard, you know, when you've got two people with 35 years of franchising experience or business ownership helping guide you, was very comfortable. And ironically, the first business looked at wasn't a franchise. I think it was something that had come across their desk at one point. It was a window washing company that was local. And Scott and Erin really helped me you know, scrub the numbers, do some due diligence. And ultimately, we made an offer on that business. And in hindsight, I'm very happy we got outbid. We landed on Conserva, and I realized right away that for me, starting a business from scratch on your own when you've never done it is just terrifying and extremely difficult. The franchise allows you to be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. To me, having that support and having the network and the training and the resources available, I knew would give me the best chance of success or scaling a lot faster. Yet in hindsight, I think we offered $750,000 for a window washing company that with no support would have been a real gamble at this, you know, at some level.
Well said. I totally agree. That's fascinating. And I love sales backgrounds. And I think you're the easiest folks to work with in franchising because you know how to make it rain. You know how to generate revenue. You know how to get the phone to ring. That, to me, the ability to sell is maybe the greatest skill set on the planet. Just the ability to influence someone to do something that they may not otherwise know they need to do it, right? I'm not aware of that. The ability to influence, persuade, to sell, to grow, I just think it's the greatest skill set. And what you've proven is not only are you a masterful salesperson, but clearly you know how to execute operationally. Just looking at your reviews alone, these are not like just five-star reviews. Your people are going out of their way to write paragraphs about how you conduct yourself. Let's talk a little bit about the kind of culture that you created within the brands. Well, let me get the ordering straight. Conserva, Koala, Bumble?
That's right.
Okay, in that order. Okay, tell us a little about the culture that you created because you're selling, but you're also operationally amazing. Your review is everywhere. I don't care if it's HomeAdvisor, Yelp, Google. You're five star across the board. People love you.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thanks for noticing because it's a lot of work. That's not easy. And in this environment, you know, Google can hold you hostage in a lot of ways. And you're not always in the wrong. And sometimes you are when you get a bad review. And we pride ourselves on fixing many of our mistakes as quickly as possible. But, you know, sometimes we weren't wrong and you get a tough review and there's no recourse for you to explain your situation without sounding defensive. So it is a delicate balance for sure. Building the culture for me was, I don't want to micromanage. I don't want to babysit. I want to hire the right people and get out of their way and let them do what they do best. And that was a learning process. I also agree that sales is a very valuable skill that's not easy to learn and it's not for everybody. And luckily for me, learning the operation side of the business was a little bit easier. It was eye-opening. As a salesperson, I've always just been focused on top line, top line, top line, grow, 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 you know, sell, sell, sell. Once I got into analyzing my own P&Ls, I realized that top line and bottom line are not always correlated. There were some hard lessons and some cleanup and different skills that I needed to learn and develop to have a more holistic approach or handle on the business. I know where my strengths are. They are in networking and business development and service. And that was one of the things that attracted me to Conserva is I came from a high service, high expectation selling position. When you're dealing with orthopedic surgeons or heart surgeons, there's no margin for error. There's no showing up late. There's no getting it wrong. There's no not fixing it immediately. So I knew if I brought that mentality to an industry that's not built the same way that we could clean up and dominate by bringing that level of service to an underserved industry. And it's proven to be true. We try to recruit people with the same mindset. We try to provide them with the training and tools to be successful. And we treat our warranty work, it's top of mind. If anybody has an issue, we don't go to the new customer and then the warranty work. We go to the warranty customer and then get the new customer. And the mindset there is if we can't service our current customers, then we don't need to be taking on any additional customers yet. And then with building culture, that just took some time. And honestly, we really turned a corner with that this year, 5-6 years in business, really started to understand how to build a culture. We always had a good one, but I couldn't put my finger on what was causing that. This year, we implemented the EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and learned a lot about the value of your core values. And if you have well-defined core values that represent who you are and what you want to accomplish, and you hire, assess, and fire by those core values, and I think the culture becomes a subset of that because you're hiring people that have a similar mindset or similar value set. That's just going to breed a great environment. And winners want to work with winners. And if you can identify the people that are holding them back, even though they might be a decent performer, if they're not professional or they're not a team player or they don't put the customer first. Now, we weed them out very quickly. And another thing I learned and live by very quickly is there's a difference between what you're paying somebody and what they're costing you. Sometimes you have somebody that you know, might be at a lower wage, you know, and you think, okay, this is a great value for this individual, but they could be costing you a lot more than if you just found somebody that can perform at a higher level for a little bit more. And all that came through those, again, reassessing those core values and preaching them. We had core values, but we didn't live by them. And that was the big pivot that we made this year.
Love it.
Jeff, how much of the culture
trickles through from the top down, meaning from the franchisor. And the only reason I ask that is because I've spoken to several employees of Empower Brands over the past few months who came to them from other large multi-brand home service franchisors. And it's, you know, the question's like, hey, you know, good move. Are you happy there? And they're all like, yeah, great company, great people, awesome culture, all about service, supporting the franchisees. It's just that. So I was wondering if any of that came from the top down. It's just kind of an Empower Brands thing.
100%. You know, and I hate to say that culture comes from the top down in my setting because it makes it sound like I take all the credit for it. But as a business owner, you know, it's where the buck stops. So in a way, you know, everything that happens is either because of you or spite of you, I guess, in a way. But in terms of Empower Brands, that's why I keep coming back to the well. Scott Zide is a tremendous leader. I think his number one asset would be empathy. I mean, he really knows how to connect and he really has a lot of patience and he's really into coaching and just a great down-to-earth individual that it's really hard to not want to work hard for somebody that's like that. So I do think that it does start at the top and it sets the tone, you know, in every meeting and every interaction. And it 100% is a franchisee-first mentality. There's no doubt that everybody here is championing our success and working day in and day out to give us the tools that we need to succeed in the field. And they know that if we win, they win. I've never felt like we were a profit center. I never feel like they're nickel and diming or making us buy a certain product because they get a piece of it on the back end or doing what's best for them just to sell territories. And they do invest a lot into us in training and annual meetings and field support. It's literally why I've been able to accomplish what I've accomplished in a relatively short period of time. I mean, I think we're in the top five in terms of revenue for irrigation companies at Koala. We're in our first 12 months, we'll come close to $2 million in revenue. And Bumble, we launched in April and we're going to do about 1.5. We just landed at an almost $900,000 roofing contract, and it's because of their support. You know, so it's hard to describe, but it's a fun environment. I mean, our national meeting we just had in Vegas, the last evening was a dance party at Jewel Nightclub in Aria, and it was electric. I've never been to an event like that. Every brand was there, and they ended up extending it by another 45 minutes because nobody wanted to get off the dance floor, and it's just fun.
Awesome.
Wow. Jeff, I want to understand. So you purchased Conserva, and obviously you have a reason for this, and I would love for you to share it with me and the audience. Why did you decide, let's go add another, let's call it complementary brand within the same enterprise? I get it, right? You're staying with Empower. But why didn't you just take Conserva and say, let's scale this throughout the state, or let's just scale this bigger? Why a different brand instead of just continuing to scale Conserva?
Great question, and one that we thought long and hard about. I wasn't interested at the time of becoming a road warrior and having satellite offices. And I think most people can attest that any business, that the people is the hardest part, finding the right people. And for me, finding the right people and managing them from another city or an hour or 2 hours away just seemed like a big undertaking. So that was number one. I just didn't want to live on the road. I did that as a sales rep. I covered half of the state, you know, for a lot of years. And it was just a ton of windshield time and 60, 70,000 miles a year on the car and hotels. And the other reason is I feel like it's just easier to sell to people that are already buying from you. You know, so we have an account base at Conserva. It would be silly to ignore that. To your point, they like us. They like how we do business. So now we can bring them, say, hey, this is the same ownership, same group, sister company. If you like doing business with Conserva, you might like doing business with Koala. So it's just the ability to cross-train and cross-pollinate and cross-market. Having said that, now that we've implemented the EOS system and becoming more proficient, we're going to look at geographical expansion because now I much better know how to hire and hold people accountable and assess them on certain metrics or performances that we just didn't have those tools in place at the same level before. It was really, how do we just keep adding services to this and go back to the same people?
It's a great answer and it makes complete sense. And I was assuming that you would say there's a theory in franchising, right? Which is you can go a mile wide and an inch deep, or you could go a mile deep and an inch wide. And that's really what you're doing. I'm staying right in my zip codes. I've got my quality of life. I'm within shooting distance of any customer, right? You have a defined geography. Instead of saying, I need to go run to Delaware, I got to go buzz over to Pennsylvania, why? We got some issues over there with our Conserva. I totally get it.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710 or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
I want to stay there for a minute if I could. Cross-pollinating, cross-training is Conserva. And just for the audience, Conserva is an irrigation business. I'm not sure if we even said it. So we have an irrigation business, we have a spray insulation business, and we have a roofing business, right? Pretty simple. That doesn't need much explanation after that. We just keep saying Conserva. I want to make sure people understand, you know, exactly what it is in the irrigation space. So have you taken Conserva and have you said, listen, I need you cross-trained into Koala, right? Or I need my Bumble guys to understand, you know, if someone's willing to do roofing, they should be very comfortable getting in an attic to do Koala. Talk to me about the cross-training and how you've managed that.
Yeah, it's taken a little bit of creativity. So the big reason for adding another business is, you know, we're in Richmond, Virginia, so we do have four seasons a year, and irrigation is not very popular in the winter, right? We will winterize systems in October, November, and then we're on the sidelines until, you know, really March. And it's hard once you have good people, you don't want to lay them off for the winter. You don't want them to find a better opportunity over the winter and not come back in the spring. So it was a little bit of a strategy to how do we combat the seasonality of the business and find another business that might offset it. So even though insulation and irrigation don't necessarily go hand in hand, like the obvious choice for me to expand would have been canopy lawn care, right? So we're already doing the water, let's do the fertilizer. But for me, I was trying to also get to a different type of a business, a larger ticket item, you know, fewer transactions and just a different strategy. So luckily I've got a great install team and they've learned insulation. So in the wintertime, we're able to put them on some of our larger insulation projects. And I also have a great relationship with the Outdoor Lighting Perspectives franchisee, Rick Popio, who ended up buying Canopy Lawn Care. I can send my irrigation installers over to Outdoor Lighting Perspectives to do holiday lights. So they've been trained on how to do that. And that's been working out for us well over the past 4 years. So it allows me to keep my guys on the payroll, keep them getting their hours, keep them happy. Rick is another great business owner. So sometimes I fear they won't want to come back to me because he's so good. But, you know, they do come back in the spring and we get rolling again. And then we cross-train the technicians a little bit. We have a lot of crawl spaces here in Virginia or in Richmond. And my irrigation techs, when we're doing startups or winterizations, a lot of backflow preventers are located in or around a crawl space. So we're the customer's eyes and ears. We had already trained the guys in the past, like to look for, you know, evidence of pests and just bring it to the customer's attention. If you see, you know, mouse droppings or snake skins and just say, hey, we were in your crawl space. We know you're not in there on a regular basis. It's just another added value. You know, you might want to call a pest control company. So now we taught them what to look for in insulation or vapor barriers in a crawl space. And we give our irrigation techs a $50 spiff if they can get an appointment set for a Koala estimate. My guys during startups are in 10 crawl spaces a day. You know, that's 50 a week. That math's pretty quick, you know, if they're being diligent. So it's been another way to help everybody, you know, elevate their career, their earning potential. And then roofing and insulation go hand in hand. I mean, that's why we went right into Bumble. I mean, ideally, I would have given it another 8 to 12 months just to get my feet under me. But as we're doing attic inspections, we were finding roof leaks and we were having to find roofers to fix those roof leaks before we could do insulation work. And after we referred about a dozen projects, I was like, wait a second, we can do this in-house. So that's why we jumped on Bumble pretty quick. And the nice thing about Bumble, it's low overhead. It's a subcontractor model. So, you know, you buy a truck and hire a salesperson and you're in business. You don't have to find the crews and train them and keep them busy. If you sell a job, you have the crew. And if you don't sell a job, you're not paying a crew to sit around and do nothing.
Love the strategy. That's sharp.
I love this. You just built two seven-figure home services businesses in less than a year.
Yeah.
While also running another franchise. So I want to dive a little bit deeper into each model, kind of the timeline, and you're running each of these businesses individually, right? I'm assuming they're each their own individual entity. Let's talk about what the infrastructure looks like for each model. So you started Conserva when?
We bought an existing Conserva that had been operated only about 12 months. So I always say existing, but not established. For all intents and purposes, it was brand new. We took over in September of 2019, and we financed that with a term loan. We didn't go the SBA route, which is popular. We found a local bank because we wanted a local relationship, and we just did a five-year term loan to get our toes in.
Interesting. Okay, so it sounds like this was a distressed business. Someone was operating it for a year, wasn't really working out for them.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe not entirely distressed. It's actually still a friend of mine who we bought it from, and he had bought a few businesses at once. One of them was really kind of taken off for him, and I think he felt guilty that he didn't have the time to give to Conserva. So he just hired people that had good experience, and he just said, go run it. You know, so just didn't have a ton of attention, which was good. It was good in some ways. I mean, I inherited a lot of overhead. You know, he had three vans and a trencher and a truck and trailers. And had I scaled it on my own, I probably would have just started with one van. And it forced us to grow very quickly because we inherited a lot of overhead, you know, which was a learning process as well. But it worked out.
So Conserva is installation and repair of irrigation systems, recurring revenue, but also seasonal.
That's right. So that was one of the attractive things about it is the recurring revenue model. So it does take a little bit longer to scale than the other two have. And I think part of that is just I have more experience, so we're going to scale businesses faster. But I just think inherently, you know, Conserva takes a little bit of while to build up your base of package customers, your recurring revenue. But at this point, we're probably at 1,500, you know, package customers that average about $300 a year. So that becomes your predictable revenue on your exit. That's going to be a good story to tell when you can show an 85 or 90% retention rate, you know, and year over year growth in those package customers. The nice thing about having those customers is it's easier to plan. You know, when we get into our spring startups, we know how many customers we're going to have to service, and that lets us know how many technicians we're going to need and what week to start. So it becomes a little bit more predictable. And then we usually schedule at around 80 to 85% capacity to leave room, you know, for new customers that might call in. Where Conserva and Bumble are just a one-off. You're one and done. You do the installation and you're out of there. You do a roof and you're out of there. So on Bumble, I'm actually, they're big ticket.
They're big ticket and they're big margin also, right? Especially the installation side.
Yeah, the installation side, there's some that we're running tighter margin and then some projects that are very healthy in margin. But what was interesting about installation, I just got lucky with my hire on that company. I hired a guy that's now running it and he came from an installation distribution background. So he had the product knowledge and pricing knowledge and had a few connections to really help us hit the ground running. Where we really broke through on insulation with Koala is on general contractor work in new construction. So we were having a hard time with irrigation going in and getting these new system installs just from a manpower, from a timing. It would stress the business too much. We're in a position now where we're pursuing it because we also now have relationships. Once we kind of cracked that code and figured out where we needed to price ourselves to be competitive, we started to win a lot more jobs. And then once we got on those jobs and provided the level of service that we provided, those contractors started to call us for a lot more work and then also started to ask about Bumble, you know, if we could quote the roof as well. Now we're introducing them to Conserva. So the plan is working, which is wild, but exciting.
You've created a flywheel across different home services, which is incredible. I would assume with Koala, you started out with the retrofit and then started working your way into the new construction, larger jobs once you built those relationships out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was all retro work. And we got lucky there too. We had a great national agreement with ADT Solar. They would install solar panels and they would upsell insulation top off just to make the homes more efficient and bring them up to code. And they would sub that work to us. When we launched Koala, we were actually kind of struggling in the beginning to figure out our pricing and get our feet under us and fill the pipeline and keep the guys busy. And then we got connected with ADT and they had a backlog of work because we were the first Koala in Virginia. So they didn't have anybody to sub that work to. They had a lot of projects for us to hit the ground running. So that gave us our start and bought us about a month worth of work for us to then go and fill the pipeline with other retro work. A friend of mine had a big project. He was building a 22-car garage and wanted us to insulate it. And through doing that work, we got in with that contractor who had three other projects that they wanted us to bid on. And we won all three of those and then got introduced to another contractor. We just quoted a $1.1 million insulation job for five-story apartment buildings that I feel pretty good about. So The scariest part is when you land that, it becomes managing cash flow and making sure you have the manpower to do it and a good project manager. We're still running retro, but we're learning how to get these million-dollar jobs. I can't wait to see where we are in 5 years.
That's awesome. I'd like to go through the labor model so I can wrap my head around, and let's compartmentalize the conversation by, if I say conserva irrigation, do you say I got 1-2 outside sales, I got a GM? What's the labor model for each brand, starting with conserva?
Conserva is the trickiest because there's really two distinct sides of the business. You've got the service side and you have the install side, and they're just not easy to jump back and forth between. So you really would benefit by having a service manager. They can still be field-based and in a production role, but have the responsibility of helping to train and be a resource for the other technicians. And then you would have an install manager / estimator, you know, somebody that would go out and do the new system estimates or chase down new work and then help to manage the project. You know, if you quote the job, then you have the information that the install team would need to complete the job. So that's the challenge, is just scaling fast enough to be able to support those two roles. So a typical franchisee would start with the service side because you have more margin and less capital to get started. And then once you're ready to get into installs, you would make that leap. I don't think any conserva has a dedicated sales rep, and we're going to be adding one. So I think we're going to be the first one. And the reason I'm adamant about doing it is because we have a dedicated sales rep at Koala, and they're making it happen. I mean, they're out there and not just being an estimator, but somebody that's knocking on doors and cold calling and building relationships. So we will be adding that next year for conserva. So right now I'm out in the field doing estimates at conserva just to finish out the year while we kind of build out what that plan looks like. In order to expand, I had to find people to run the businesses. And that was also one of the contingencies that Empower asked me when I was buying Bumble. They didn't want me to bootstrap it. So they said, if we let you buy Bumble, you know, we want you to have somebody to help you run it. We hired somebody to run Bumble, and that's when we implemented that EOS system. So in theory, once we find the right person for conserva, I'll have 3 meetings a week. A 1-hour meeting, my L10 meeting with them to go over, you know, their weekly goals, their quarterly rocks, any other issues that come up, and just hold them accountable to those tasks. In a weird way, the third business made all of them easier because it forced me out of the field. I was in the day-to-day in conserva, and I was in the day-to-day in Koala. And then when we launched Bumble, I couldn't, there's no way. So it forced me to hire people into those roles, which in some ways made my life easier.
How many employees for conserva in total?
We've got 4-person install team, about 6 service techs on average, and then 1.5 admin. Give it a 10-12 range is kind of where we hover there. And then Koala, we're at a 6 per-
With annual revenues of what, Jeff?
We'll do about 1.5 this year.
1.5, okay. Do you remember the earnings claim when you went through the sales process? Do you remember what they told you?
The net on the FDD was about 20%.
20% net. Do you remember the top line?
I don't remember where the top line was then. I know it's changed because it keeps getting better and better. So back in 2019, I think top line was probably 800,000. But
that's what I'm trying to show. That's the point I'm trying to make. You've 2x'd the item 19, which is just remarkable. What a feather in your cap.
I'm not even at the top 5 this year. Top guy would probably do 5 million this year, which is amazing.
Good for conserva.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're doing great. There's some strong territories out there for sure. I'm trying to keep up. We got a plan to get back.
Love it. And then Koala, what's the labor model on Koala?
And so Koala, I love the labor side. I love them all, but Koala and Bumble. And Bumble I love because of the subcontract model, but we can get to that in a second. Koala I love because our installers are piece rate, which is great because it just makes your labor more predictable when you're pricing out projects. And the more efficient these guys are, the more money they make. So, you know, we have a very healthy compensation plan for them. It works. So we're up to about 6 installers now. So we have 3 2-person teams. And then I have an admin that's dedicated to Koala. And then I have an ops manager. His title is now president. And then a dedicated salesperson.
And they're all W-2'd?
All W-2. Yep.
Okay, got it. And what are the annual revenues? I know it's newer. What are the annual revenues of Koala?
Yeah, Koala. So we launched that in last June. From June till December last year, we did 500. This year, our first calendar year, we'll do about 1.8. We have a chance at 2, but I think 1.8.
I've heard that the insulation business, a truck, can produce up to $1 million in revenue. Is that a gross exaggeration? It seems like a massive number where I feel like most home services, 200 to 300 per vehicle.
Yeah, I thought so too. I didn't understand how that was possible. And I think a 2-person spray foam team could do $1 million for sure. And honestly, a 2-person, you know, blow and bat team might be able to do the same. I mean, they'll get pretty close. But yeah, we look for a 2-person team to do a good 5,000 a day. I mean, we want to be over 50, 60,000 a week when we were running a 4-person team. It's nuts. It really is.
It is super rare we have anyone that could tell us a vehicle could do really north of 400 grand a year in the service business, because I'm expecting 250 and it's like, okay, that's normal. Like, you're just norm. And then you hear 350, like, good for you, you know? And then you hear you could do up to a million. It was like Puriclean. If you had a water crew only, you could do up to a million, but they have to do water only, right? Not fire and not mold remediation. If they just focus on water and they were your water crew, you could do that. But it's rare. That's impressive.
Yeah, it takes a good team. It's not easy to get there, but it's doable.
Are you seeing 20% nets so far in the conserva koala, even in your absence, as you step away, add more layers of management and payroll? Are you still seeing 20% nets?
We're very close. My goal is really now, you know, 10 to 15 per business since we have somebody running them. But yeah, it's certainly doable. And for me, we took on some debt. We reinvested in the business. So my numbers, I wasn't worried about net. My thought process is if I can have 20% of a $400,000 business or 20% of a $4 million business, I'm going to do everything to get to $4 million as fast as I can. But now that we're scaling, it's the net profits happening on its own. I do like to spend, you know, so we outfit our guys in a lot of gear and we do a lot of promos for them. We do a lot of outings and team building and stuff. So we're just reinvesting in the business and having a lot of fun. But yeah, it's certainly the profits just becoming a byproduct, which is nuts.
When we're working with a client and we'll say, hey, yeah, call Jeff LeBrec. He's got three brands. Ask him about his net. And then they'll call you up and they'll be like, hey, man, I spoke to Jeff. He's only doing 18%. Jeff is running airplanes through his business.
That's about
you can't
right.
ask Jeff. His net is highly subjective. This guy is looking at a roof yep. in California. Like, there's yeah. no way this is a real trip. You got to be running the plane through the business.
If it's a business trip, yeah, we definitely run it through the business. The accountant once told me there's two people you meet in this world, Jeff. He says one's a customer or a potential customer. So we're just going to leave it at that.
Did you fly the crew out to this conference? Did you fly?
No, not to the conference. So we've only flown to a couple job sites so far. We had one is, you know, one of our installation jobs that we were doing was 2 hours away. And my sales guy said, man, I got to get down there and meet with the super. And these guys, that ironically, our guys needed staples. They ran out of staples and didn't want to leave the job site to get them because they were rolling. And my sales guy's like, I don't have, you know, 4 hours of drive time at all this week. I was like, 4 hours? It's a 20-minute flight. Let's go. So we flew down to the job site and delivered some staples and met with the super. We were back before noon. And then we flew up to Maryland to meet with another roofing contractor that had been roofing for about 5 years that we just wanted to pick their brains. So we took my roofing guy up there. But that's been fun. Anytime I can find a reason to fly, I'm happy.
Our final labor model would be Bumble, gross revenue, and just close the loop on the net conversation.
Bumble's doing great. So we just got lucky, landed a whale of a project that's got some healthy margin in it. So Bumble, we also didn't finance, you know, so that one's debt free. So that one will scale a lot faster as well with that service and debt. You know, the subcontractor model, I guess there's pluses and minuses to all of the businesses. And for me to launch it was no additional overhead. I didn't need a big warehouse. I didn't need a lot of vehicles, where Koala is a heavy lift. You know, a spray foam rig's about 140,000, a blow-in rig's another 50, your F-250s are 50, 60,000. So, you know, we're about $500,000 of equipment into Koala, which I also like because there's a barrier to entry there. So not a lot of people are like, okay, I'm going to start an insulation company, go invest $500,000 to do it. So where that's the only kicker on the Bumble side is, you know, as nice as a subcontractor is, I think it does reduce that barrier to entry to some. Maybe there's somebody that already does exterior work and they can just add roofing, but it hasn't been the case for us. We launched in April and we'll do well over $1 million, probably 1.2, 1.5 between now and the end of the year, which is insane.
With like no employees, just a sales guy running around doing estimates and then calling the subs and saying, hey, I got a job for you.
That's the beauty is if we sell 10 roofs today, we can do 10 roofs next week. If I sell
right.
a massive insulation job with Koala, I don't have the manpower. And same with conserva, you don't have the manpower. So it takes a little while to scale those in the same way.
I want to highlight a few other things. You know, there's all these people at home saying, oh my God, I want an insulation franchise. Who wouldn't want to do 2 million in less than a year? Who wouldn't want $1 million Bumble in less than a year? But a lot of these people are the same people who say, I don't want to be involved full time and only show me a home services franchise that generates all the leads for me because I don't want to do any selling, right? You don't land a $900,000 roofing job. Like, that doesn't come to you. You had someone out there banging on doors, hitting the streets, right? Generating this revenue. If it wasn't you, someone was out there banging on doors, whether it's homes or probably more businesses, these larger B2B jobs. And these are the things that a lot of people don't want to do, and they may or may not be willing to hire for those things.
I do a lot of validation calls, as you can imagine, across three brands, and I love them because I always learn from them, and I really enjoy talking about business with other people, and I get excited when other people are excited about getting their business started. I get a lot of questions about drawing a salary in year one. I get a lot of questions about absentee ownership. My answer back, I mean, is with absentee ownership, you can buy anything and not show up. Now, if you want a successful business, you're going to want to be involved. Number two, if you put your entire life savings into something, why would you not want to be there? That doesn't make any sense to me. You know, that's your future. That's your investment. And no investment is going to grow as fast as it would with somebody else at the helm. So it just never made sense to me. And maybe it's the difference between being an owner operator and being in the field day to day, or being more working on the business versus in the business is really what they mean by it. But I don't believe passive income exists, and I don't believe absentee ownership is really viable. I also think that if you go into it trying to replace your corporate income in year one, you're probably going to fail. I think a good rule of thumb is year one, you lose money. Year two, you break even. And year three, you start being profitable. Year four, you don't look back. And if you happen to make money year one, great. But if you're expecting to and you don't, you're going to have a hard time. And I also tell people it's going to take more time than you think. It's going to take more money than you think. It's easy to sit there and say in 5 years, you know, all the debt's paid off. We're going to be at $10 million. I'm making, you know, $2 million in net profit. And man, your first year of business ownership, I woke up and I felt like I've been doing it 5 years, you know? So that 5-year timeline, when you say it out loud at the beginning, sounds easy to live it. That's where the hard part is. That's the hard part.
You have to be willing to deal with that short-term pain and discomfort. You're building something that will be way larger than any job could ever be. I mean, you're talking like massive enterprise value. What give me like, do you have like a 5-10 year goal? You mentioned exit before. What's the goal here?
Ultimately, there's going to be an exit. You know, I hope before I pass away, we can sell it and enjoy some time in retirement. But honestly, I don't have a number on it because I'm just loving what I'm doing. You know, as stressful as it is, as difficult as it is, I absolutely love getting into the office early, being there, you know, being in the field, interacting with customers. I mean, it's a big reason we bought the business also was to, A, show the kids what it's like to work for yourself and get them involved in the business. And then B, get more involved in the community. You know, I grew up, my father was in the Army and just grew up around a lot of, you know, community service. In medical devices, we were able to give, you know, monetarily, but we weren't giving with a lot of purpose, didn't really give a lot of time. So, you know, we're able to sponsor the kids' tennis and golf teams. We're able to sponsor dance teams. We're able to do all sorts of different stuff in the community. And one that I'll get on to tell you about real quick, which I thought was awesome, and we're going to do a lot more of moving forward, is we had a church give us a call for irrigation. They have a garden and they wanted to add a makeshift irrigation system, drip system that the volunteers installed. And, you know, we've been called out to churches before and did a prayer garden project, but this one was different. The whole purpose of the garden was to grow food and donate to local food banks. The guy that takes care of the garden out there mentioned he wanted to expand it, and he got approval to double the size of the garden. So I said, well, it's easier to install the entire irrigation at once. What's the timeline of the expansion? He's like, oh, that could be 2 years. I said, what's the holdup if you have approval? He says, well, it's always budget. I said, okay, what if I did the irrigation for free? Would that help? He was like, well, yeah, that would help, but just to have the fence. I said, okay, well, what if we did the fence for free? Would that help? So I went out and found a fencing contractor that agreed to do the fence for free. We did the irrigation for free. Then we called Outdoor Lighting Perspectives to add some accent lights for security and safety and just overall nice look to it. And through that, we accelerated the timeline from 2 years to 2 months. We got some great before and after pictures of it. But now that garden will produce 2,000 pounds of food per year to local food shelters. And a lot of food banks get canned food and they get boxed food. They don't get fresh produce. That was a cool example of being able to use this business to really have a different impact in the community. And we'll certainly now have a goal to get to the point where we're doing one a quarter between the three companies. I went a little bit off tangent there, but it's been fun.
Love that story. You're a man of faith? Is that a faith-based brand?
Not really. I mean, I would say I'm more spiritual than religious. And, you know, I just felt compelled. It's not easy to help. I mean, we were at the beginning of our season where we're strapped for cash. You know, so it's not like, oh, I'm sitting on billions of dollars and this is a little project. We felt it. We felt it, but we also felt like it was the right thing to do. And if you're in a position to do it, I don't know how you can stand there and not do that project. This is really what it boiled down to.
You did that project and then you end up with $1.5 million job on a 5-story building. It's karma. It's the way it works, man. You give a fence, you get $1 million roofing job. You want to take someone's fence, you lose your company. People don't understand karma. They really don't. People really do overcomplicate their life. They just don't understand the simplicity and doing good things like that. So I commend you. And I think it's great that you're using your your resources, right? It's not just money. It's the cost of goods and labor in that case, where you just said, I'm going to donate it. I think it's powerful.
Yeah.
Love it. Justin, final, we're approaching the hour. This was fantastic.
We used to see this in QSR, right? Food and beverage. You own five different food concepts. We saw people wanting to do this in fitness and beauty. I want to have a nail salon and next door have a hair salon, and right, and kind of like layer and stack different concepts. And now we're seeing it in home services. And I feel like, in my opinion, historically, people would think of home services as a guy in a van. If you could do a second van, great, right? You're killing it. But I love how we're viewing these as empire building businesses, and you're doing it way more efficiently. This would have cost you millions of dollars to build if you were doing it in brick and mortar food concepts. It's way more efficient, less risk, better margins. I love what you're doing.
Thank you. I get criticism by staying with franchises. I think that's important to talk about. Yeah, people get hung up on the royalty. Why would you pay a royalty? And if I started my own irrigation company, I'd probably be out of business. If I wasn't out of business, I'd be at $200,000-$300,000 of revenue and spending more than I've spent royalties trying to figure it out. We just had a training team come by and do an office tour. We host them at our office for the brands that come into town to train, and just to show them what a day is like, you know, how we have it set up, how we run things, and just candid Q&A, where they get a different perspective outside of just hearing about from corporate, how you're supposed to run your business. So one of those candidates brought it up. They said, man, we're getting an IT team. We've got a marketing team. We've got accounting people. We have a franchise business coach or consultant. You've got the playbook. You have field support. Like, if you were to start your own company and hire all of those positions, it would cost you way more than what that royalty would. That's a big reason we've stuck with the franchise model and keep coming back to Empower, which I think is important to touch on, because I think people get hung up on the wrong things.
I totally agree.
Yep.
Every day we deal with it. I just had a conversation yesterday with a guy. He's like, yeah, you still own a business, staffing company. I go, was it a franchise? He goes, no, I started it, did it for a few years. Man, it was a nightmare. I lost my wife, got divorced. You know, and I listened to this and I'm going, what industry was it? And he goes, it was staffing. You know, I go, did you look at some franchise? He's like, yeah, but what did I need a franchise for to do staffing? And I go, I don't know, maybe to keep your wife, to keep your business, to scale it, just those few things.
You can't say enough about it, man. The network that you get, I mean, it's awesome, because now between the three brands, I've got, you know, probably 250 other business owners, but not just random businesses, the exact same business, right? So if I've got an irrigation question, I've got 15, 20, 30 people in a similar market to call, and, hey, what are you doing about this? Or how are you doing that? Or really even to talk you off the ledge on difficult days, man. It's somebody to vent to that gets exactly what you're going through. And these are not dumb people. We've got some really, really sharp business owners that will pick up the phone every time you call. And, you know, and then beyond business, you're obviously making new friends, and it's a unique set of circumstances or unique situation, but to me, it's worth every penny.
I totally agree with you. That's an episode on the benefits of franchising, right? I love that you said it. I'm actually reflecting on this hour that I've spent with you. And one thing I want to say, and I want to tell the audience, everyone who comes on this show financially benefits in some way from doing the show. You're like one of the only people that came on here that really doesn't benefit at all from doing this. You literally took the time out of your day to give back to people that are aspiring entrepreneurs. I just think that takes a ton of class, and I really appreciate you doing this. You don't sell franchises. No one will call and buy anything from you. The vertical we work in, the people that are going to listen to this are going to be from all over the country that want to buy businesses. And what they're going to get from you is really just an unfiltered version of why I bought these brands. You said something that I never hear. I love getting up. I love going to work. I love what I do. I'm building brands. I'm teaching my kids things. You know what the average conversation I have every single day? I hate my boss. I hate DEI. I hate the fact that I was passed up for a promotion. I commute 2 hours to work. My life is miserable. My marriage is failing. Like, what the fuck? And then there's you. And then there's this episode. I'm happy. I'm building. I got out of corporate America. I'm building my own culture. I implemented this EO pro system. Like, come on. Love it. People need to like tune in. You're as calm as a pilot, but people need to understand. Listen to what he's saying. Jeff Lebrecht.
Yeah.
Good for you, man. You're a tactician. You're a strategist. You have the intestinal fortitude to be self-employed. You're taking risks. Love it. And I really appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, I love talking about it. I do get passionate about it. I'm excited about it. And it's one of those things you just have to start. Just do something. If you're miserable where you are, just start. People get caught up on the financials behind a business. You can find the money. There are ways to get loans, to get started, start exploring, take that first step. And it's not easy. My first year, I didn't sleep at all. I would be up at 2 or 3 in the morning every morning, and not because I was ready to work, just because my wheels were turning. There was no off switch. So it's not easy, but it's also extremely empowering. When I realized at the end of my first year, after all the troubles we went through and all the times I thought we were going to fail, people will threaten you with a lawsuit over silly stuff. People don't pay and jobs go sideways and everything that went wrong. I still woke up and still went to work and I said, man, I'm still standing. And then it hit me. All I need to do is wake up every day, put one foot in front of the other, keep plugging away, and outlast my competition. That's it. Because the more I show up, the only way it doesn't work is if we quit. That's it. Just get started and keep pushing forward. And it's that simple.
Great advice.
Awesome. Let's end it there.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed that. I'd do that anytime. That's fun.